fucking first cut. Golly!
Welcome to the First Cut Podcast. I'm Rick Gaiman, and we are mega preview potting it. Kyle Porter joins me. KP, you are still lurking around Tulsa and looking for any untold stories, flipping over rocks. You're still there.
I couldn't get enough. I mean, I'm in like a really echoey room. I've got my nephew in the other room hollering, so I apologize for any noise. But last week was so much fun that I stuck around for more. So I know we're gonna get to Colonial, but I feel like there's just I wasn't able to be on the podcast at the end on Sunday very long because I had to write and I was noisy and whatever. So I'd love to, if you have anything left over to chat about the PGA, I'd love to do that. I've actually got a question for you also, if you want to get
sure,
to that.
Let's, I guess let's start there. Let's do it.
Okay. So I put this on Twitter on Monday and I'm really curious about your opinion, which is who ends up with the most majors at the end of their career. Out of Rory, who's got 4 currently, Brooks, 4, Spieth has 3, JT, DJ, and Morikawa have 2, and then Rahm, Scheffler, and who else did I put on there? Oh, Bryson, all have 1. Who do you think, if you had to bet your life 50 years from now, who out of that group has the most majors?
So I can... I would immediately cross off Brooks. It's just he had a quick run and he might win a couple more, but he's got the injury concerns. Like Brooks to me is like the least likely, even though he's already got 4. I think the strongest arguments are for guys that have good success at Augusta National because they'll get to play it forever. And that's not a course that will necessarily phase them out as they get older. So I believe the correct answer is Spieth, because he already has 3 and he's going to have a lot of really good, like every Open Championship is probably going to be a good spot for him and the Masters is going to be a good spot for him. Like he's going to have a lot of good looks at it.
Are you scared that Spieth is the right answer there?
I'm terrified of that. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because logic would say, okay, it's Colin Morikawa. He's already got 2. He's very young. JT's got this vibe about him, but I don't know. Should JT have more by now? Like John Rahm only has 1. That's scary. So yeah, I don't love it, but I'm sure I think Spieth is the correct answer.
So I think actually Spieth is one of my – this is like, I love where all these guys are at numbers wise, because I think it makes the question really difficult.
Right.
Like if they were all at 1 or all at 2 or within 1 of each other.
Right. Like if Morikawa was at 4, he'd be the answer.
Right. The way they're spaced out makes the question, I think, extraordinarily difficult based on how they're all currently playing, because the guys that have fewer, it seems like, are charging, and the guys that have more are kind of not regressing, but you're kind of like, I don't know, like is here. Yeah, here it is. Producer Jacob just pulled it up. If you're on YouTube, I actually think the answer might be Rory. And the reason or Brooks. And the reason is like, if they win 1 more, I think it's kind of over. Like, I don't know that anybody's getting beyond 5. 5 is just a stupid amount of major championships. And Rory is playing well enough right now that you could envision him winning the Open Championship this year, right? I don't know if that's going to happen. In fact, I think it probably won't. But that is very alluring in terms of just getting 1 more. If I had to go past that, I think I would go Spieth or Rahm. And part of the reason I ask is because everybody just jumps on whoever the most recent major champion is and said, oh, they're going to win 7. And you're like, well, no, they're not, because nobody wins 7. And I don't know. I think it's very easy to forget that Rahm is only 27 years old. I think it's very easy to forget that Spieth contends at both the Open and the Masters almost every year, which is terrifying. So if I had to go beyond Rory, I would say either Spieth or Rahm.
Yeah, I was kind of I was kind of assuming the number was like 5.5. Like, if it's definitely 5, Rory. If it's more than that, like Spieth could. If Spieth goes on, I can't believe I fall for this every single time. But he is just like, yeah, he's going to contend twice a year. And when you contend twice a year, and you've got 8 years left, you've got 16 times being in contention. Like, okay, he probably wins 2 or 3 of those.
Producer Jacob, do you have a take here? Do you have an opinion here on who you think will end up with the most majors out of this group?
I'll take Colin Morikawa.
That was the consensus among replies that I got on Twitter. That was the most. Well, that's a very unscientific way of tallying them up, but the most. Nate, like I saw his name more than anybody else. And I don't know, man. Like I was watching him this week and I don't know if he can thrive when it's not like perfect conditions.
I mean, will it be perfect conditions more time than not, I guess is the question. I mean, over the long period of a sample size of 50 years ish, you know, like we're talking about,
Or he's,
you got to assume he's going to be there.
He's 24 and he'll figure out how to play in windy conditions at some point.
He'll figure out how to play Augusta. I mean,
he did finish
theoretically
5th there this year. I think he just like watching him this week, I was like, does he lack some pop? Not obviously off the tee, he's not as long, but even with his irons, he was just getting balls like batted away very easily when I was watching him. But the rebuttal to that is like, he should win multiple US Opens, right? And he hasn't even really like, contended in that one yet. So I think Morikawa is the, yeah, that's an interesting answer.
Not on this list who I would throw out there. I mean, I guess I'm going to just keep riding this guy forever. Cameron Smith. I mean, if you think about already a player's win in ridiculous conditions, granted he got the correct side of the draw, but I mean, he plays so well at Augusta. He was around this week at the PGA. I mean, I think that's a name not on this list who might be on there 2 years from now.
Who wins more majors between him and Zalatoris?
I think Smith just has that dogged mentality that's going to put him there more.
I think Zalatoris does too, though.
Who on this list is definitely not the answer? DJ, right?
DJ doesn't have time on his side.
That's what I mean. He's not going to have as many prime majors left. He's already 2 behind Rory. DJ is objectively the wrong answer.
I think that's right. I don't know what to do with Bryson on here.
Yeah, that's the X factor.
Because I'm like, well, he's young. I mean, he's what, 28, 27, something like that. Something. He's 28. But like he's just so volatile, which I guess is actually kind of a good thing when you're talking about this list, but he's also like volatile as a participant where he's in and out and trying side saddle putting and then, you know, yelping about driver length. He doesn't seem like the career trajectory is going to be a mess, which is super fun to cover, but I don't know if it is like great for, he scares me about like the consistency.
Yeah. And he might reinvent himself 3 or 4 more times before the career's over. So who even like trying to project his future major championship results now feels like a fool's errand, because if we would have done it 5 years ago, we never would have given him credit for being potentially great at US Opens because he wasn't that same guy.
If you're, for sure. And if you're predicting Morikawa, you're like, okay, well, I kind of know I'm getting 15 years of just taking runs at majors. And if you're predicting Bryson, you're like, I don't know, he might take 3 years off to like go treasure hunting in the Caribbean, like diving for like lost pirate ships or something. Like, I have no idea like what the total I'm getting is.
Yeah. Well, you got to assume he's going to miss some time for the presidential run and the campaigning and all that stuff. Like that takes a lot of time and energy, but I guess maybe, I mean, hey, he's got to travel around. Maybe he could make the campaign stops around tour stops, play campaign. I think that'd be smart. They travel around anyway.
Who would be Bryson's VP?
Harry Hicks.
That would
SMU guy, you get Harry Higgs eternally likable, right? He could go, imagine the campaigning Harry Higgs would be able to do on behalf of Bryce. He's not that bad, guys. I know him really well. I know he wants to be the smartest guy in the room, but don't worry about that. Harry Higgs is the guy.
Yeah, he could tell stories about like qualifying with Bryson when we were 20 years old.
And yeah.
Yeah, but Harry Higgs could maybe talk me into voting for Bryson. That's how much I like Harry Higgs.
We will transition this a little bit here. We can still do a little bit of PGA Championship stuff because Justin Thomas is playing at Colonial, which I thought we were going to get that Tuesday morning phone or that Wednesday or Monday morning phone call. Like, all right, well, it's been fun. I'll catch you guys down the road a little bit. But as of right now, seems like JT going to rock out at Colonial. And he, you know, in the aftermath, Kyle, you know, he's got this 24-hour rule, right? He gives himself 24 hours to celebrate, and then it's back to business, which I guess when you've won as often as he does, I don't know if there's going to be any lingering effects of what we saw from him last week, or if he just realizes, hey, we are in the middle of a critical stretch of golf on our schedule. Like, I'm just going to head down and grind this thing out.
Yeah. You know, I think if I was a major champion, which I'm not, as everybody knows, I think I would enjoy playing the week after a major win, because like, it's one of the few times where you're like, I don't like you have to feel so free to just do whatever. Not, I mean that like on the golf course, it's like, Phil did this last year, right? Where he plays Colonial the week after he wins at the PGA at Kiowa. And it was like, he literally said, I don't care if I miss the cut, I'm the PGA champion. And Phil is a little like looser with stuff like that. But I think if you're JT, you're like, I'm just going to go out and enjoy my four rounds. And sometimes I feel like that just frees guys up to play the best, like their best. Like, I think about Rory a lot when I think about that. Something like that would free him up to be awesome, where you're not thinking about it. You don't care. You just won the PGA. That's a big deal. I think that is, I think we could see some really good golf from JT this week in a different way than we saw it at the PGA, because he was super locked in and so intense, but almost just a freed up version of him to kind of hit whatever shots he wants. And if he's on, then he could win again.
TJ in the chat, Lakers Taylor asked about JT's Whoop data. Did you see this, Kyle?
I did not.
So Whoop let us know that the night going into the final round, Justin Thomas recorded a 100% sleep performance, which, let me tell you from experience, that's hard to do. He spent 9 hours and 50 minutes in bed, which is an hour and a half more than his 30-day average. And he got 2.5 hours of REM cycle sleeping. So well rested going into Sunday. I have two things about that. Number one, I want this to be available for every single player so that I have access to it, so I know who was out until 3 a.m. the night before drinking.
Yeah.
But I think it's a lot easier to sleep when you're 7 shots back going into a Sunday. Show me Mito Pereira's Whoop data.
Yeah, Mito's data does not look like that. My data does not look like that. I don't think I got 2.5 hours of REM sleep the entire week. Did you see Mito's quotes after the final round?
Well, I heard him say to Amanda Renner, like, hey, I expected on Monday, my expectation on Monday was to make the cut, which yeah, I think is a super healthy way to look at what most people will say was a meltdown and that he choked it away or all these other adjectives that we want to use. But yeah, I think that's a very good perspective to have, because he's right. Like, there was not an expectation he was going to win that golf tournament until, I don't know, the last quarter of it.
Well, the thing that was interesting to me, I did hear that, and that was interesting, but also he said, you know, I thought on Thursday I was nervous. That was his, what, second major? Third major? I think it was his second.
Second major.
Yeah. And then I thought on Friday that I was nervous. And then Saturday I was like, wow, I'm really nervous. And then Sunday was just like a disaster. And not in terms of the golf, although it was, but he was talking more about how nervous he was playing in the final round. And that's something that, you know, I didn't, and JT said this actually when we were talking to him afterwards, was like, he was like, I know how like nervous I was to win at Quail Hollow in 2017. And I had already been winning a bunch on the PGA Tour. He didn't say that, but it was sort of implied. So he was like, I knew how nervous these guys that had not won before would be. And I didn't really, I didn't take that into account, you know, because we had just seen Scheffler like not kick away the Masters. And I feel like in recent years, we haven't seen a ton of guys just melt down at major championships. Now, the guys that have not, that have like stayed the course and won are kind of like, they're stars, and maybe that's the reason that they're stars. Right. But I didn't fully take into account on Saturday night that the four guys at the top didn't have any winning experience, didn't really have any major or didn't have any closing experience, whether in majors or on the PGA Tour. And that just really, I didn't think that would affect everybody, I guess, but that sort of was how it went, especially at the very top with Cam Young and Mito.
I was not expecting basically all of the no win guys to kind of falter. But hey, that's why winning's hard. I don't think we got a chance to talk about this on Sunday, Kyle, but 5 under got you into a playoff. Could you imagine whispering to Rory McIlroy when he was 4 under through 5 or something, and he was at 4 under par, like, you just need one more to get into a playoff. He would have had no idea that he was that close to getting to a playoff. Like, if he could have just, I just feel like he got off to such a hot start and then never made another birdie after, I think, the fourth hole, probably thinking he needed much deeper than where he was already at.
Well, you know, everybody was hollering after the tournament about like, well, if Rory shoots 70, 70, 70, he's in a playoff. And I was yelling like, he was at 4 under on Sunday. It's not like, forget about what happened Friday, Saturday. He's got to be so frustrated. And I think there's a lot of different things that I think about this, but like one of the things is, and JT talked about this, it feels at majors, Max Homa has talked about this also, like you have to be perfect. And I think, JT hit a shank on Sunday.
Yeah.
And won a major championship.
He hit shot. It was 108 yards to unknown, which is like, I'm going to have a shirt made up.
But it feels like, and I wanted to ask Rory this. I saw him briefly before his round, but I wanted to ask him what he thought he had to shoot on Sunday to win. And I guarantee you he would have said like 63 or something like around there. And I guarantee you he thought that as he's playing 17 and chipping it over the back of the, you know, like, all these different scenarios that play out on Sunday, and you probably like, you can't play for like, oh, well, if I get to 5, maybe it, like you, I don't know that you can play that way while you're out there and there's so many guys behind you, but in retrospect, it's easy to, it would have gotten it done. I did communicate with him. So he skipped media on Saturday and Sunday. Is that right?
Sounds right.
And so I just asked him like, hey, if you were feeling elation after the Masters shooting 64 in the final round, what are you feeling this time around? And he just said dejection. And that was, I mean, it was kind of sad. It was just a bummer because it's like he had not really over the course of his career experienced, other than the Masters in 2011, leading from out in front at a major. And then completely like dropping all the way back to not really being in contention by Sunday. When he leaves from out in front at a major, that's a wrap. Like it's over. Vince Carter.gif. And that just has to be such a deflating, like you keep backing up and backing up to the rest of the field. So I don't know. I could talk about this PGA forever. It was such a good one. But I know we've got a guest to get in here. Not a guest. We've got one of the primary components of the First Cut podcast to get in here.
Yeah, let me add another voice here to the conversation. It's him. It's the coach. What's going on, coach?
I got to be honest. I'm a little bit conflicted today because we have to be professional. We have to move on to the Charles Schwab. This is what we do, and that's the beauty of it. But I'll be honest with you. I'm a little bit dejected that Mark was able to cash the one and done. But I've moved past it. I needed a day. So I'm good. So let's continue.
He's like JT with the 24-hour rule. Hey, coach, We saw each other in person on Friday and Saturday, or Thursday and Friday.
Yes.
Was I taller or shorter than you thought I would be?
I thought you were absolutely the exact height I thought you would be.
Of course, Coach is touting his prognostication. You were exactly that height and that weight. I knew you'd exact. I nailed it.
He actually won money on that in Vegas. Guessing what my height was.
I will say this, and I don't want to ruin the flow, but this actually happened. I never thought in real life that time could stand still, but it did. It did. I looked up as I was packing my bag. There was KP getting ready for his live shot, and then if you just pan ever so slightly, about 5 feet to the left, there was one single solitary bag on the ground. AT&T was the main sponsor. Then he had two guys standing on the practice putting green or chipping green waiting for one player. That was all that was there. Those three human beings. Time stood still because it was Jordan Spieth's bag, his caddy, and his coach waiting for KP's favorite player. Favorite human of all time. I didn't know what was going to happen. It was like watching one of those nature videos. Like, what's going to happen?
Anything could happen right now.
I planned my hit times around when Spieth would be warmed up.
Apparently so. It was awesome. It was awesome to see, and it was great to finally be around KP in person.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Bryson, Coach. Well, I'm going to throw you right in the fire here on Bryson DeChambeau. He is still currently in the field. Now, I think there is still kind of 50-50 of whether he's going to play or not. Because if you remember, he played three practice rounds at Southern Hills and then decided to withdraw from the PGA Championship. There is really no risk for him being out there at Colonial. He's a Dallas guy. I mean, he plays three rounds. It's not like he's flown in and it's this big ordeal. I imagine he's going to see how the hand feels before he tees it up or decides whether to tee it up. But this is, as Kyle and I were talking about, such an important stretch of golf, especially as we're leading into a U.S. Open, an event that should, maybe not this one at Brookline, but U.S. Open should be great for Bryson, and he's done absolutely nothing this year.
Yeah, it's that's a great line. That's exactly what he has done, which means for somebody who is so completely hyper competitive, that's got to be driving him nuts. I think that's the only reason that at this point he's still doing or trying the showing up, let's see how it feels, and then maybe I can go on Thursday morning. I think it's very and maybe this is my betting side of me coming out that gets very frustrated. I don't know. But for all these players that show up and then, I'm not going to play on late Wednesday night or starting the tournament and then withdrawing on the morning of the first round. And that's very frustrating because you take a tournament away or an event away from somebody else. For Bryson, he's such a big star. I don't mind him doing this. But if you can't play last week, then what makes you think you can show up and play this week with a couple of practice rounds? I don't get that, but I understand him wanting to try. But it could not have been a worse scenario for Bryson to have the injury, have the surgery, and have so many of the other players playing well. He's got to feel like they're just literally racing by him, and he is standing still.
Yeah, if you look at the results and the metrics, Kyle, it's ugly stuff. I mean, he's losing strokes across the board, even with the driver. I guess the hope is that the injury is the reason for the bad play. And if you fix the injury, you fix the bad play.
Yeah, I guess I just don't know what's the upside of playing before. I mean, he's basically trying to play before he's fully ready, right?
Correct.
And I don't know what the upside is there. Is it just to like get rounds in before the U.S. Open? I don't understand why he doesn't just wait until, okay, like I'm ready, I'm playing Memorial, and we don't have to like do the song and dance for 3 days or whatever. I don't know. I'm curious about the reason for that. I think he's still one of those guys that you're like, okay, is he part of the live golf stuff? Like what's, and then he had that weird interview last week where he was like, everybody deserves second chances. And you're like, what does that mean? Like, what are we talking about your wrist? Are we talking about like, I don't know. There's a lot going on there. The Tigers, like when we talk about Tiger, like, is he going to play? Isn't he? That is a worthwhile thing to talk about because Tiger's literally trying to like get his body right for 4 days at a tournament. I don't want to do that every week with Bryson. I barely want to do it with Tiger. I don't mind it because it's Tiger, but with Bryson, I don't want to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Is he going to play? Isn't he? Just show up at Memorial or U.S. Open or whatever and play, and let's move on.
Scotty Scheffler back in action this week, coach. And I said the best thing that happened about Scotty missing the cut of the PGA Championship is we can just end the heater conversation. Now this is just a season for Scotty, and he is going to Texas, well-rested. His missed cut, if you look at the metrics, wasn't all that bad. He gained strokes on approach. He just kind of lost some strokes putting. It wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. Maybe a little bit of a mini reset for Scotty Scheffler after having one of the best first halves of the season ever.
And once again, Rick, I would completely disagree with you on the heater comment. I think you are dead wrong, because if you watched him play last week, he was heated a whole bunch in those first two rounds. He got hot. He had a temperature that we've never seen before.
True.
So for me, the reset, I think, was real. And I really believe that part of the reason, guys, that we saw the frustration come out in that anger is because he was really feeling the pressure of putting together a historic season. And when you get to that point where you start to read all the headlines and you turn on the TV and everybody's talking about what you've done that only Tiger Woods has done, or you're showing the graphic that you've done something that, you know, David Duvall and two dudes from the 50s did. That's crazy.
You and Horton Smith have done it.
Yeah, that's like crazy. So I think that this has got that pressure now off of his shoulders. You can get past that second major. So now the Grand Slam talk for anybody who is doing it is over. And I think you are spot on that we're going to see a new, fresh Scotty Scheffler that could contend this week.
It was interesting, Kyle, to see Scotty all hot and bothered, something that you don't usually see. And we have seen a couple of things. Some guys, when they're on a run like he's on, sometimes they'll get outspoken. Sometimes they'll get more animated on the golf course. I'm thinking of like when Patrick Cantlay was on his heater, and then he just started becoming like this media darling and was giving all these great quotes, and he was feeling himself. Like guys feel differently in the moment. Scotty was hot under the collar for not playing well. And you do wonder if it is a little bit of pressure or if just he wasn't happy with his play.
Well, I'm curious. So a couple of things that are going on. You know, he has talked about how, like, listen, I just won the Masters. I just won four tournaments. That doesn't mean I'm not going to be competitive anymore, right? Like he's talked about, I'm mega competitive. And I guess my question is, was this what he was doing this time last year? He just didn't have cameras on him for every single shot, right? Because he wasn't the number one player in the world. He wasn't necessarily contending. I don't know if it's new, because I didn't watch every single shot of Scotty Scheffler's from 2 years ago or whatever. But I think that it is sort of the byproduct of, like, when you are like crazy competitive like that, when it's going well, it goes well. And when it's going badly and you have cameras on you 24/7, that stuff's going to get picked up, right? And so I think there's like some sense that everything got like compacted emotionally. Like you just jam all this emotion and like all these like lifelong dreams into 3 months. And there has to be some like, okay, I got to have a release for this. And so I think that's a little bit of it, but I think he's also just like a super competitive guy. Then when it doesn't go badly and you've got a camera on you for every single shot, like that stuff's just going to come out every once in a while.
I like it. I don't mind it. We'll see how he plays this week at Colonial. But gentlemen, I think it's time. We'll transition to our best bets and picks. We'll offer up our one and done selections. The fan vote, it's been completed. I have the results in hand. Good job to the fans. They got their votes in early. We're going earlier than usual. We got more votes than usual. So well done, fans. We'll get into the best bets. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners.
I love a beautiful lawn. You love a beautiful lawn. Everybody loves a beautiful lawn, but they don't love how long it takes and how difficult it can be. And that is where True Green comes into play, because it's the easiest and most affordable way to get that beautiful lawn. Let's be real. You've got plenty of other things to do in your free time than focus on your lawn care. So let True Green take care of all of that hard work while you get to do everything else that you want to do, like go play golf. Here's what you need to do. Visit TrueGreen.com, okay? It allows you to do you. Let them do the lawn care. And if you visit TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people, that is all guaranteed. You can trust True Green to give you the best lawn because they are the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. They offer a satisfaction guarantee and they have a verified best price promise, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. It's TrueGreen.com. Get started now. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. And that's because the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe has some great features like the available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads, and much, much more. So think about those places that you want to go, the things that you'd like to do this weekend, and where the Santa Fe can take you. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. And we're back. Best bets, gents. This is where we go over to Caesars Sportsbook. We scour every square pixel of the website, and we find the best possible wager that we can. Coach, I'll start here with you. You have a head-to-head matchup, and you have it featuring a golfer that we saw in the playoff last week.
Yeah, this is something I like to do after majors because it's a big reset for all of us, even in from the golf betting perspective. And to me, the hardest thing to do is to recover from a really hard emotional week. And Will Zalatoris, not only did he have a long week, but he lost in a playoff, which is even more disappointing. He said all the right things, but I don't think he's going to come motivated. And Victor Hovland is supremely motivated this week. Minus 120, I'll take it.
Victor Hovland over Will Zalatoris. KP, I went with Taylor Gooch over Tony Finau. I got even money on it. I'm a little bit worried about Tony Finau. Like, he is still a very good player. He's having basically the worst season he's had in his career. In terms of strokes gained, he is not okay. Question for you, Kyle: Where do you think Tony Finau ranks in driving distance this season?
Oh well, since you're asking, I bet it's low.
Damn.
So, the 2021-2022 season,
correct?
And we're looking at the two drives, not the average of all drives.
That is correct.
I will say 34th.
34th, and you assumed that was on the low side because of the question that I was presenting you.
Correct.
74th.
What?
This is like the first time in his career he's outside the top 10. He's not that long anymore, and has never been accurate, and he's having the worst. He's still gaining a half a stroke per round. He's still like 50th on tour in strokes gained, but that is the worst run he's had in like 5 years. So I don't know if it's an outlier, if it's just some bad golf, if this is the tail end of it. I don't know, but it is noteworthy to me that this is like the worst season we've had from him in 5 years.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting to ask him about. I don't think he did media at the PGA, but if he does it at the US Open, that would be an interesting question. Like, not like, why are you playing bad? Because I think that, you know,
why are you so bad?
Yeah, why do you suck? But no, like, why? Like, I think guys and coaches experience this. Like, I think it's and you have too, Rick, just from having guys on this podcast. Guys love talking about like nerdy golf stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Oh God.
Right, where you can be like, okay, what, like. Like you asked Sam Burns that, Rick, where it's like, okay, why did your, what was the question? Why did your strokes gain approach improve so much? Like, did you start trying to hit a different shot?
And his eyes lit up. Like when you could talk about the nerdy stuff, they're like, okay, cool. Let's do it.
Totally. And it gains you credibility, I think, with, okay, we just want to talk about like your life of fame and for, you know, whatever. Like they don't want to talk about that stuff, but they would love to talk about, you know, how many strokes they're gaining from 180 yards and in or whatever. So I think that would be an interesting question. I've got similar to Coach. I don't mind playing guys the week after a major as long as they weren't in contention, because it's not playing four rounds that takes a lot out of you. It is the emotional weight of being in contention. So like, if you want to bet against Mito Pereira this week, that's a good bet. Not because he blew the tournament, but because emotionally he's got to be cooked, like just completely dead. I went with Colin Morikawa over Scottie Scheffler. Morikawa was not in contention last week. I'm not worried about him being that tired. He plays this golf course really well. Scottie Scheffler's got a miscut and a T55 in his two appearances here. And Morikawa's got two top 10s. So I'm getting good odds on it and a better player specifically on this golf course.
Morikawa over Scottie Scheffler plus 120. So three matchups there for our best bets. Let's go to the grid, the picks. We'll go through sleepers, top 10 wagers, and winners. Thank you, Jacob. Coach, your sleeper at 70-1 is who?
It's Ryan Palmer. And this is a guy that gets up to play in the state of Texas. He doesn't hide from it. He's very vocal about it, but he's yet to win in the state of Texas. So the motivation at his age is completely still there. I picked him, I think, for a top 20 2 weeks ago, which he cashed easily, I might add. And I think this week he's a live dog at plus 7,000.
He's a member here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a member at Colonial, so certainly has the inside knowledge. And Ryan Palmer is 70-1 this week. I went a little bit longer, JT Poston. You can only really get access to Poston on golf courses that ask you to be accurate off the tee. RBC Heritage, TPC Potomac, those are two of his best finishes this year. Colonial, tree-lined, you got to play out of the fairway. I'll take Poston at 125-1. KP, your sleeper has won this event before.
He's won this event. He played great last week on a course that Ryan Palmer and Jordan Spieth called Colonial on steroids. I forgot about that.
I'm glad you said that.
I love the kind of converging trends there with Chris Kirk this week at Colonial.
Yeah, finished fifth last week. He's won this event. This event has gone through so many name changes. Do you want to? We should play that game. What were the previous names of this event?
Well, I played in the Pro-Am when it was like the it was a hotel. It was like the Embassy Suites Open.
You're close.
The Crown Plaza Invitational. It was the Crown Plaza.
Crown Plaza, yep. Then it had 2 years as Dean and DeLuca, which if you know what Dean and DeLuca does, I'll give you $1 million if you know what kind of company that is.
I asked the same question the year they were doing
it. I think I know.
And I don't know what it was.
I think I know.
The jeweler would know.
Jacob has come to claim his $1 million.
Yeah, catering. If you got $1 million, I'll take it.
They're a caterer.
Well, I think they're a bit more like a luxury, like craft food store type of a thing. Like I remember getting some like chocolate covered espresso beans that were Dean and DeLuca. So I think it's kind of like a ultra condensed fresh market type of a vibe. They got like a fresh deli in there, I think.
Yeah, you're close. Store. I'll buy out for $1. I'll send you $1. It's an upscale, okay. An upscale grocery store.
Oh, no wonder they're not a sponsor anymore. God.
Their headquarters, Coach. Their headquarters, Wichita, Kansas.
Are they still up and running?
Oh, I hope so. I don't know. I have no idea.
My first job was in Wichita. I was just there 2 weeks ago. I've never heard of Dean and DeLuca, so it is what it is.
They have 30.
I hope they are. I hope for all the people there that they are.
They have 37 locations, which doesn't sound like enough. So we went to Dean and DeLuca. Then we didn't have a sponsor, and it was just the Fort Worth Invitational for that 1 year. Now we've got Charles Schwab. So we're back to the financial stuff because before Crown Plaza, it was Bank of America, MasterCard. It was for 1 year, Tom Lehman won it. It was called the Colonial National Invitation. Not invitational, invitation. Sure. Southwestern Bell. This thing has gone through 9 different names.
I wonder what event this one actually might be it. What event has had the most different, like the Sony Open has been the Sony Open for like 60 years. This one has to have had the most different title sponsors.
Because the American Express, that was like the Humana. It was the Desert Classic.
Bill Clinton was like the title sponsor. Yeah. It was like the Bill Clinton Open or something.
There's some outrageous ones. Yeah. Anyway, that's a different episode. Top 10 Coach, your top 10 is playing like a top 10 player. He is in the zone right now. Who is it?
Yeah, he had a great finish too, Tommy Fleetwood. And he's also a guy that's really struggled the last couple of years. And so he's kind of sneaking up on people. Normally you wouldn't get him at this number for a top 10, but his form has not been good for the last year or two. But recently, yes, I love this play. And he had a fantastic day on Sunday. He made a lot of money in 18 holes on Sunday, and I think he'll carry over into a really solid week this week.
Yeah, he really did make a lot of money. Flew up the leaderboard on Sunday. I went with HV3 plus 450, and there are a lot of nerdy data through lines for Colonial Kyle that revolve around playing the horrible horseshoe well, playing the long par threes well, something that winners generally do. HV3 checks all of those boxes. I'm terrified. Like, when he's going to be in the final group on Sunday, I'm worried about that. But I figure, just hang on. Let's get yourself a T9, cash this ticket, and we'll check out next week.
So you will not be pleased to hear this, but we had a long discussion over tacos on Friday night about who has our least favorite golf swings on the PGA Tour. And HV3 was prominently involved in that.
Webb Simpson.
Webb's up there. There was.
I don't know how Webb Simpson looks like. He shanks it every time he hits the golf ball.
It looks like he is
right.
It looks like he's accelerating. Like, I don't know. It's weird. Most guys accelerate on the downswing. It's so bizarre. It hits the ground and then it looks like his follow through is faster than his swing was.
That's a little bit how Varner is too, though, because he gets to impact and then he almost like
whips it.
He pivots his body all the way around and It looks like if I tried to do that, I would be in the hospital after like three attempts. It looks impossible. Like, you can't physically do it. And I don't know if I love watching it, but he is somehow able to do it. So
how about a swing you do like to watch is your top 10?
Yes. Great transition. Colin Morikawa plus 200. This seemed a little bit longer than it should be given. I mean, I know he wasn't great at the PGA last week, but given his history at Colonial, it is a pretty good field, though. So I think that played into it a little bit. It's a kind of a shockingly good field, given it's the week after a major. But yeah, I like Morikawa to top 10 again this year. I think he's done it the last, I think, 2 years at this, or the last two times he's played this golf tournament.
Yeah, that Tulsa to Fort Worth is like 250 miles. So very, very good for getting some of the big boys to come over. Picks to win. I'll get out of the way here. Max Homa 25-1 for me. I'm all in. I'm a Max Homer believer. I'm a stan. The metrics love him. He wins. This should be a better setup for him than most places. I'm in on Homa at 25-1. Coach, you have gone with a golfer at 35-1 who was deep into that Oklahoma State narrative last week. Who is it?
Yeah, I don't even feel good about this one at all, to be honest. Taylor Gooch, and he was in the mix for, if you call eight back in the mix for a little bit of the weekend. I don't know. I had no good feels, and it's such a good field. I didn't want to pick a big name. I'm regrouping, so I'm going to go with Taylor Gooch. I think he's a really good, solid pick.
Taylor Gooch knocked himself out of that like little mini slump. He had that one bad event after he came back from Zurich, and now he's back to normal. So all signs pointing in the right direction for Taylor Gooch. And Kyle, to the surprise of absolutely no one, you have selected Jordan Spieth to win this event. And I got to tell you, it's coming, dude. I'm like, I'm just all in on this guy.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about what happened at the PGA. I think if you flip the order of the PGA and the Byron Nelson, a lot more people would be picking him this week. It was just 2 weeks ago that he played great at the Nelson. He plays great on this golf course. I am worried about the putting. There was somebody in the comments asking, where was that?
It was up a little further. Can you give us the last five Jordan Spieth putting weeks?
I can do that. He was minus, so this is strokes gained per round, minus 0.7 at PGA. Plus 0.4 at the Nelson. He finished second. Minus 0.6 at the RBC Heritage. He won somehow. That's impossible, but he did. Minus 0.6 at the Masters. He missed the cut. And minus 1.8 at the Texas Open, where he finished T35. None of that is encouraging, but I guess I'm going on the fact that he can, the Nelson was basically he putted decently and he almost won. So that's sort of, I feel like, what you're getting from him right now, based on how he's hitting it. So I'm betting that Jordan Spieth is going to putt well at a place where he's always putted well, which is Colonial.
Okay. So I have not sent out my email newsletter yet, but I have a nugget in here for you, Kyle.
Okay.
This is behind the scenes. You get it first, an exclusive. Love it. That stretch that you just defined from Jordan Spieth, and actually going back to Torrey Pines, 34 rounds, 34 measured rounds. It's the worst 34-round putting stretch of his career. We are in it right now. However, what's the saying? An immovable object and an unstoppable force or whatever? Because Jordan Spieth, of every single golf course on the PGA Tour, putts the best at Colonial. 36 rounds, he gains nearly 9/10 of a stroke per round. So if there was ever a time to break out of the worst putting slump you've ever been in to the going to the course that you putt better at than any other course, like that's this week.
I mean, I'm actually like still really excited about his next 3 months because I just don't – he can't putt it this poorly for this long. Maybe he can. Maybe he will. I don't know. But – he's not that bad of a putter. And I just feel like guys are not going to stay in a slump like that for forever. And I could be wrong about that, but that just seems to be the kind of the, that's how I'm viewing the rest of his summer.
Gooch, Homa, Spieth for us as the winners, which, gentlemen, leaves us with just one final thing to do. It is our one and done segment. But first, we're going to take a quick break and hear a word from our partners. It's a really fine line creating workout clothes that are great in the gym and workout clothes that are also great to look at outside the gym. And Vuori has threaded that needle. They are designed to work out in, but they don't look like it. They don't feel like it. And it's incredibly comfortable stuff, whether you are running, training, swimming, doing yoga, running errands, lounging around the house. It really doesn't matter. These are versatile clothes. You'll find me often in the men's Sunday performance jogger because I like the jogger situation that goes on down at the bottom, but they're very comfortable. They've got a little bit of a shorter inseam, so they're not as bulky as other pants or other joggers that I have seen out there, and I've really enjoyed how they work both in and out of the gym. So now, here's what you can do for our listeners. First-time purchasers are getting 20% off. All you have to do is go to Vuori.com/first. That's Vuori.com/first. Again, not only will you receive 20% off your first order, but enjoy free shipping on any U.S. orders over $75. And here's my favorite part, free returns. Yeah, go check it out. Vuori.com/first and discover the versatility of Vuori clothing.
Take your business further with the smart and flexible American Express Business Gold Card. It offers flexible spending capacity that adapts to your business. You can also earn up to $395 in annual statement credits on eligible purchases at select business merchants. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/businessgoldcard.
And we're back. One and done. I have the fan vote. So the fan, actually, I think this might be the most votes we've gotten, and it was the earliest we've gone. So I think I just need to put the fear of God into these people, Coach. Like, if you don't get your pick in before tomorrow morning, you're not getting anybody.
I've learned from running our little brand called The Early Edge to where it is that if you don't do that, they won't move. They literally will not move. You have to threaten them with their collective golf betting lives.
It's good to know. I'll start threatening them more often. So
there you go.
Third place vote for the fans with 12.3% of the vote. They have not chosen Harold Varner III.
Okay.
In second place, this is kind of an interesting name. This is a name we have not said once on this show. With 13% of the vote, the fans did not choose Daniel Berger, who won this event in 2020, Coach, but he's kind of...
This was the first event out of COVID that people remember. This was the first event out of COVID, and he beat Colin Morikawa in a playoff.
Yeah, and Morikawa lipped one out, I think, in regulation from like 3.5 feet. And then he missed another one in the playoff, I think.
Yeah.
Yep.
And the strength of field was basically a major championship because everyone was playing it.
Everybody played that week. Yeah.
The fans, with 20.8% of the vote, have chosen for their one and done, Max Homa. That's who they were.
I think Max is like a top 10 player in the world right now.
Don't have to twist my arm.
I think he's on the back end of the heater, so to speak. So I do not think he is a good pick this week because of the recent run that he's been on. I think he's going to gas out. I think he's going to flame out. And nothing against him. I just think that this is the back end of that. You should have got him 2 or 3 weeks ago.
The fans? Sorry, Kyle.
Real quick, Data Golf has Max Homa ranked 20th in the world, and Dustin Johnson ranked 23rd, and Spieth ranked 26th.
How about that?
Who's ranked like 15th?
I think that's accurate.
Who's ranked?
I think that's accurate.
10 to 15 is Hovland, Burns, Zalatoris, Hideki, Morikawa, Sungjae, Fleetwood, Tyrrell Hatton, Connors, Neiman.
Okay.
That's kind of hard to argue with.
I don't agree with that.
Okay. Sian Ajad, who is needing a miracle at this point. Okay, so he is, $7 million behind. He needs both major championships. He's going to need a couple of playoff events. He's going to need them all. Has gone with Victor Hovland. KP, you have created a little bit of a tier of your own between Sia and the fans. Who are you rolling with this week?
Well, I might be getting Jason Kokrak in his last ever PGA Tour event before the LIV Golf series starts.
See, that was stupid, Kyle. You should have saved him for the LIV Golf because we have no rules anymore. We're going rogue. So you should have taken Jason Kokrak in London and gotten the $4 million for first.
Well, I'm saving Robert Garrigues for London. So
smart.
Yeah, so we're good there. I feel good about it. We're getting murdered here. I didn't get a chance to weigh in either. I'm so annoyed that Mark got JT last week. He was not even excited about it.
No, it's beyond annoying. It's maybe one of the most annoying feelings I've ever had in my professional life. To be up, how annoying.
We can make his head explode and start adding the LIV Golf events.
That would be awesome.
He will not be happy.
What if I send out an official email and make it look like we're really going to
make
do
it look
that.
Like a press release? Like,
oh my, oh, so done. Done and done. Done and done. Let's go.
KP, oh my God. 3.6 million, the fans, 4.9. Greg, 4.92, has gone with Taylor Gooch, which, coach, that is also your selection, although you are closer to the top of the board than Greg is.
Yeah, and it was just basically kind of what I do. Whoever I think is going to win that particular week, I'll go with him. I want it done. It doesn't always match up, but this week it does. Again, I don't feel great about this pick, but the one thing I'm not going to do is quit. We still have two majors left. We still have a lot of points. Both of those majors will have over $2 million in prize money. So this thing is not over. It is not over by a long shot.
That is true. There is a lot of money left out there. And we do the tour championship where there's a lot of money at the top. So there's a lot of money left. I went with Will Zalatoris. I am a little bit worried about whatever you want to call it, the hangover. I just think he's really good. It's the way my schedule is working out that I kind of need to play him right now. And I'm happy to be doing so by myself. So I'm going with Will Zalatoris. Jacob, if this was a sports book and it was, you know, without Mark, you'd be the favorite at the top of this. Who have you gone with?
I'm going with Jordan Spieth this week. You guys have sung his praises. I had him on the board, was contemplating stashing him for the Open, but I still got Rom and DJ around for that. So I'm hoping maybe one of those guys will be in enough form by the time we get to St. Andrews. I also have Tiger on the board still available as well. So, I mean, we could all just universally slam Tiger at the Open.
And then Mark, who is basically $4 million clear, has gone with Abraham Answer, which honestly, he could probably pick anybody this week. It doesn't matter.
And I hate that you can say that. I hate that you can say that. Because the one thing you never want to do is have somebody in the lead of a contest you are in that has never won anything a day in his life, because he is going to be insufferable. In fact, I may quit the show. I might quit.
I mean, the good news is if Jacob, myself, Coach, even Greg, like win the 1.6 million, it at least makes it interesting.
Yeah, it does. We got to start rooting for each other.
He's having a Scheffler like season.
He really is. It really is.
Or is he having a Mito like performance and he is going to melt down and take 12 more zeros the rest of the way?
Well, I thought that's what was happening after January 1, but
yeah, he was bad after January 1 and then he just
eagled 17, so we're in trouble.
He really did. Mm. And he does not have the Mito 18 swing in his bag when it comes to one and done. So.
The electrocution.
Is that what they're calling it now? Yeah,
I was walking with somebody that said it looked like he got electrocuted at impact.
It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen. At the worst time.
It was a check swing. I felt so bad for him. I thought he handled it really well. I feel like I'm like rooting for him now. Like I want him to go win a bunch based on how he handled everything.
I agree.
Probably will. Very good golfer. All right, gents, that'll do it for our mega preview pod. Round by round recaps coming after each and every round of this week's Charles Schwab Challenge. But for now, big thanks to producer Jacob doing all the hard work behind the scenes. That right there is the coach. You can find him on Twitter at the Coach Rules, Kyle Porter, who you can find at Kyle Porter CBS. And you can find me at Rick Run Good. This has been The First Cut. We'll catch you next time.